Alfonso Cuarón is the director of the new movie Y Tu Mamá También, which translates to And Your Mother Too. Set in Mexico, it's about two teenage boys whose girlfriends are going away for the summer. Neither the boys nor the girls can quite get to the point of committing to fidelity. After the girls leave, the two boys, who are in a perpetual state of arousal, hit the road with an older woman, not much older. She's 28 and has just left her husband. Cuarón has described the movie as the story of two teenage boys finding their identity as adults and a woman trying to find her identity as a liberated woman. Our film critic John Power says it's the sexiest movie ever made about young men's overeagerness in bed. It offers a portrait of teenage life that's so smart, touching, and sexually liberated that it makes you embarrassed for what passes as a teen movie in Hollywood. The movie opens as one of the teenage couples is having sex, but it's not the kind of passionate, romantic encounter that we often see on screen.
Actually, the sex in the film is really bad.
Right.
It's very clumsy and
yes,
it's very
yes.
rapid.
Yeah.
It's like, I guess, like 90% of sex. I know that everybody hates to admit that, but 90% of sex is pretty much like that. And more, and particularly if it's teenage sex. We wanted to present the sex as with the same honesty that we presented the scene in a supermarket. And the camera is always keeping a reflective distance, an objective distance. And, yeah, I mean, the thing is that if you see Hollywood sex, for instance, the characters, rather than having sex, they are doing some sort of aerobic exercises. And they always choose the worst positions, you know, like positions they say, oh, my God, that's so uncomfortable. And there they are. They are, like, for hours doing it with... and usually there is a knife under the bed. And then sex is accepted in Hollywood like that. Or sex is accepted also if it's about humiliating a woman or raping a woman. Then sex is sort of accepted. But if you try to portray sex in a very honest and natural way, some people find it offensive.
Were you ever uncomfortable directing the sex scenes? You know, because the actors, I guess they're in their early 20s, the two actors.
They were in the late
teenagers.
Teens when we were shooting.
Yeah. Uh-huh. What did you, like in the opening scene, what did you tell the two actors was going on in their minds that you wanted them to be thinking about?
Well, the thing is that what we had very clear there is that it pretty much is a scene about a couple of a very young couple that after having sex, they are trying to make each other promise that they are going to be faithful during the summer because they're going to be apart. And pretty much they talk about a lot of things and they joke a lot, but they never promise each other nothing. And how we staged the whole thing is who was going to be on top of the other. And whoever was going to be on top of the other was going to have the power in that moment. So it was a game of power. And we see at the beginning that the boy is on top of the girl and is pushing the girl for the girl to swear that she's not going to sleep with anybody else. And then the girl goes on top of the boy and the boy then is requesting him to promise. And then the whole thing keeps on turning, whoever has the power of the conversation in that moment. And that's how you stage it. So, in a way, the sexual aspect was irrelevant.
Now, there's more sex to come in the film. I think when it comes to a movie getting a rating or being censored, whether the sex is good sex or bad sex is kind of irrelevant as long as it's sex and there's people who are naked, there's going to be trouble. So what kind of trouble did you run into in releasing the movie?
Well, in Mexico, my company sued the government because of the rating that was given to this movie.
What rating did the Mexican government... government give the rating?
Yeah, that was part of our legal suit, and it's still part of our battle. They gave a rating for over 18, when it's a film that it was intended for young adults to see also. And by young adults, I'm talking about 15 and over. And part of the reasons we sued the government is because we want the rating system to go away from the government. I find it very dangerous in that the rating is in the hands of the government because in the past it has been used as political censorship. What we're suggesting is to the rating board, because I believe in ratings, the rating board to be an independent entity with representation of very diverse social groups, including the government among these social groups, and to make the whole writing process a more democratic process, and ultimately giving back the responsibility of what the children can see or not to the parents. Here in America is a completely different issue because the rating system is not doesn't belong to the government. It's the MPAA that rates the films.
The Motion Picture Association of America.
Of America, yeah. And we choose not to have an MPAA rating because it would have been NC-17 that has a very bad connotation.
So
not only bad, yeah. And not only bad connotation, but it excludes you from a lot of theaters and from a lot of publications. And I really believe that the MPAA system has to evolve, and it's the time for the MPAA system, rating system, to evolve.
Now, you said that you would like people 15 and over to be able to see your movie. I think you have a couple of teenage sons, am I right?
I have one teenage son. And I'm not saying that they have to. I think in Mexico, actually, a lot of sexual educators and a lot of teachers, they were asking the parents to go and see this film with their kids or to send the kids and then for them to see the film and discuss the film with them. I just find it kind of absurd that it's a film that deals with teenagers, with teenage behavior, and teenagers cannot see the film. It's like you cannot see what you do.
You're assuming most of the 15- and 16-year-olds are having sex anyway, so they might as well see the movie?
And if not, they are going to have sex very soon. And it's not only about sex. The thing is that for me, it's not only about sex. It's about many things. It's about how you can hurt your life. Part of the sad aspect of this film is that you have two characters that are filled with life. And when they're confronted with their own identity, rather than embracing this identity, they choose to wear masks. And in a way, they become these dual characters towards the end. And I think that there are a lot of taboos that we carry around ourselves in terms of when we're looking for our identity. And the more that themes and issues are spoken with teenagers, I think that the more free that these teenagers are going to grow as adults later on.
If you're just joining us, my guest is Alfonso Cuarón, and he is the director of the new film Y Tu Mamá También. I imagine a lot of American movies came to the Mexican theaters where you saw movies when you were growing up. What did you think that American teenage life was like based on movies that you saw?
It was not that different than the Mexican teenage life.
Mm-hmm.
I think that the whole journey of being a teenager is a very universal journey. And in a way, that's the reason why I think that Y Tu Mamá También has connected with audiences all around the world. The difference starts to be more when you're talking about class rather than countries. I think that the middle class all around the world are pretty much the same, and the upper classes are pretty much of the same.
Let me bring up class. There's three main characters in your movie. They're each from different backgrounds. One of the boys is from a very privileged background. One is from a working class background. And the young woman in the movie is an orphan. What kind of background are you from, you know, socioeconomically?
I'm riding between the two boys. I'm middle class, maybe more upper class than Julio, but definitely more lower class than Tenoch. I'm right in the middle. I'm part of a class that is actually disappearing in Mexico.
But the middle class is disappearing?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, now there is a big lower class and a very tiny, very, very, very wealthy class.
Why is the middle class disappearing?
Because it's been crushed between the upper and the lower class. The way that how modernism attacked Mexico, when economic liberalism arrived to Mexico, the first casualty was the middle class. The small businesses disappear, favoring the big corporations, and with that, a lot of the middle class disappear.
When you were growing up in Mexico, did you see a lot of American films set in Mexico? And films I'm thinking of in particular, like The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly, The Magnificent Seven. And what's that Orson Welles film with Charlton Heston and Janet Leigh?
Touch of Evil.
Yeah. So I'm wondering how Mexico looked to you through the eyes of American movies.
My favorite is Charlton Heston playing Lopez. That was funny.
Did you say funny or phony?
Both.
Okay.
Both. But yeah, that's a great film. Actually, you gave examples of films that actually I like. I mean, Touch of Evil and The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly, and
Magnificent Seven.
Yeah, those are okay. No, I think I have way more problem with many other films that they portray, because in those films, like the Sergio Leone films, those are Westerns that take place in this mythical land. I'm way more offended about many contemporary films and the description they have of Mexico. And growing up, you would have all these films that they had scenes in Mexico, going through Mexico, in which Mexico is seen as this simplistic place where a lot of people with sombreros taking siestas.
Mm-hmm.
And with this vision of, you have a Mexico with mariachis playing Guantanamera. That doesn't exist. Guantanamera is a Cuban song, Stuff like that, It's like this Hollywood view of Latin America is all the same. Plus, their view of what is that same. It's a place where people are in sombreros, and if you're not careful, they're going to steal your money, and there are the banditos and the corrupt politicians. And even now, you see films like Traffic, in which I think that in a way they are accurate in portraying the corruption in a political system in Mexico. I was just surprised why it didn't portray the corruption in the political system in the U.S. also.
My guest is Mexican film director Alfonso Cuarón. His new movie is called Y Tu Mamá También. We'll talk more after a break. This is Fresh Air. My guest is Mexican filmmaker Alfonso Cuarón. He directed the new movie Y Tu Mamá También. Did you move to America to make movies, or were there other reasons why you left Mexico?
Well, it was a series of coincidences. I was not planning to leave Mexico at that point. I made a film, my first film, that I co-produced with the government, with the Film Commission. I didn't have a good relationship with them, and I knew that I was not going to be able to do another film in Mexico for a while. And I got offers to do films in Hollywood, so I just, I took the offer because I needed to work.
How did Hollywood find out about you?
I did this film in Mexico called Love in the Time of Hysteria, and as an agent signed me, and they saw the film at the Toronto Film Festival, and my agent signed me, and then he showed the film to Sidney Pollack. Sidney loved the film, and he offered me one movie, and one thing took to the other, and I love New York, and I had the opportunity of living in New York, and I took it. I go to Mexico all the time. I need to reconnect with Mexico and touch holy ground. So I go there very often. But at the same time I feel very comfortable living in different parts of the world.
Now your new movie, Y Tu Mamá También, is being described in a lot of articles as part of like a new wave or a rebirth or a new birth of the Mexican film industry, along with movies like Amores Perez, like Water for Chocolate, Guillermo del Toro's movies, The Devil's Backbone, and he also directed Blade 2. Do you think that there's like something new or revival happening in the Mexican film industry?
And not really. Like Water for Chocolate was a film. It was 10 years ago. People talk about the rebirth because of movies like Amores Perros and Y Tu Mamá También, and I keep on asking, okay, and which other? And there are not that many other. I think that the problem that the Mexican community, film community, has to accept and confront is is a problem of a provincial mentality. Movies like Amores Perros show how you can be very specific in terms of a context and nevertheless be very universal in terms of the subject matter. And I think that's one of the great strengths of Amores Perros. I really have faith that younger generations now are going to start making a different kind of cinema in Mexico. Mexican filmmakers and Mexican artists, they're coming they have to get rid of a lot of taboos. Like, for instance, in cinema in Mexico, you have a lot of taboos. That if you're entertaining, then you're superficial. If you are technically polished, is that you want to be Hollywood. If you deal with your characters are middle class, then you're bourgeois. If you don't have enough ideological denunciation, then you are a reactionary.
So what's left?
No, that's part of the problem. And then if you travel around, then you're a bad Mexican, you know, and you're a sellout. But there's a new, and that's part of the hangover of an ideological left wing in the 60s. And I believe that now there is a younger generation that has a more evolved vision of life and more evolved view of the world. I think that this generation is the one that is going to make the difference in Mexican cinema now.
Well, thank you so much for talking with us about your movie. Thank you.
No, thank you very much, Terry.
Alfonso Cuarón directed the new movie Y Tu Mamá También.